Hello, and good day to you from episode 5 of our new podcast series, Project Breakaway, a metaphorical and literal time in the day when we here at Predator Cycling take some time away from working in the back shop to come and share with our listeners what we're doing, how we're doing it, what it takes to do it, our ideas, our innovative success stories, and even our missteps and failures. If you find yourself with an interest in bicycles, composite manufacturing, out-of-the-box design, or even curiosities beyond, I encourage you to stick with us, settle in, and learn a little. I'm Courtney B., co-owner and project manager of Predator Cycling. I'm here with my partner, RM Goganian, the other co-owner, CEO, lead designer and engineer, and early 4 a.m. riser of Predator Cycling. How's it going over there, RM?
It's going great. I think the day's just about over, right?
Not at all. So it's our first full week of the new year. Mm-hmm. And it feels like we're just working 5 times as hard.
Yeah, that's the point of the new year, right?
Yes, I guess. So let's jump right in here because we have a lot to talk about today.
We do. This is a packed podcast.
It is. So you need to monitor yourself.
Yes, I'm going to do my absolute best because this is one of my favorite topics.
So. Okay, so let's talk. So Arm, we had a lot of hits on our website. On our new road frame, the RF20 here, in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah. It's been kind of steadily ramping up.
Right. So it's been a passion project of yours for over 2 years.
Yeah.
And it's been unveiled and it's been on our website as a pre-order for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought we might take a little bit of a deep dive into what exactly makes the RF20 stand out.
Yeah.
What makes it cool.
Yeah.
I figured maybe we can go into a little more detail about each part, specifically components that are made here in-house and the design qualities, et cetera.
How deep dive you want to go into each thing.
I want to go into a deep dive that our listeners understand, but I also want to not bore them with 5 hours of conversation.
It's not boring.
No, it's not. It's not for a nice 30-minute conversation.
All right, okay. Let's do this.
So let's start from the top.
Yep.
What is the general concept of this road frame? Arm, you wanted to design a new bike.
Mm-hmm.
What's the first thing that comes to your mind when you're like, I want to design a new bike?
So, well, this particular bike was something that we'd been talking about for a long time, about a road bike that was well, to back up just a little bit, in the past with Predator, we'd always talked about this concept of like total efficiency, like not just thinking from a perspective of like fit or aerodynamics, but just as the whole package. And that's kind of where this RF20 came from, of this idea of building a bicycle that rode well, had good road characteristics, was comfortable so that you could produce more power, it fit correctly, and it could cut through the wind. And kind of crossing all of those key points and working as a balanced bike. And also in this particular bike is really geared towards a more traditional road frame.
So not a crazy road racer, more of a leisurely road?
Yeah, I mean, you could tell the bike is never going to go away from our core of being building race bikes. I mean, that's just kind of what I've always done.
Your background originally was time trial bikes for
For racers. That's it.
The circle thing.
Velodrome.
Velodrome.
So the original, the very, very first bike we ever built, which is the black bike that's sitting back over here, is a time trial frame. So for road racing. And then that quickly moved into track because I'm a track racer and I love track. But it was always geared towards building the fastest bike in the world. Just make it go fast. It doesn't matter if it's comfortable. It just, you have to get fast times.
So the RF20 is more of a road frame, a fast bike for...
For your
Joe Schmo, Jane Schmo.
Yeah.
Who also wants to beat
for
traffic.
For sure. It's to be honest, it's kind of where I'm at in my life right now. I want to go out and ride my bike. I'm not racing anymore. I want to go ride and just have fun. Go do a Century. Go do, a Grand Fondo.
Can you attach a Burley to this bike?
Sure. Why not?
Because that's where you are right now.
Yeah, I am. It's a tandem with the Burley attached. But my point is that it's a bike that is definitely has a racing heritage behind it. It's definitely responsive. It's definitely quick. it descends like a monster.
And it looks cool.
It looks cool. It's aero. It's fast. But it's not to the point where it's uncomfortable to go fast. We tried to kind of tone it back to the point where it's like, this is a bike you could go and ride 100 miles on. And, you know, not complain that the bike is too rigid and it's not forgiving. And not forgiving enough to lose performance. So we just tried to kind of skate that,
right,
that thing. And also, I probably can't go without saying that the bike, the reason that this RF20 is actually created was we were doing an AU class that was geared towards it. And that was geared towards design.
Because it's a design piece.
It is. And originally, we did not want to, I was not going to do the RF20 for that class. The person we're doing the class with, Michael Sagan, was adamant that we should do the road frame that we've been talking about. And so that kind of led the inspiration to do this bike. And hence, it's taken so long because it wasn't really planned to happen like this, but it came up and I'm really happy it did.
And now it's here.
It's here.
So let's get into the nitty gritty of the frame. Let's start with the front triangle. Yes. It is a monocoque piece. So basically, it's a one-piece system made out of composites.
Yep.
Is that a unicorn in the composite world?
No. It's happened in the past. It's if you look at modern builders, semi-custom, custom, even like small production shops that are building bikes are torn between going monocoque front triangles and going into like a piece system where you have like multiple pieces, four or five pieces that are joined together.
Because that's normally kind of the
that is the
cut, copy, paste of a bike is the tube to tube.
Well, there's tube to tube where you're mitering tubes. There's also like molding tubes that are sectioned that are glued together. But it gets tricky. It's a tricky process. So like I'm trying not to go down too far of a rabbit hole in this concept, but the thing that makes ours different is monocoque front triangles have been done in the past. We're doing a monocoque front triangle, and we don't have, there's no bladders in our bike. We have mandrels.
Mm-hmm.
So we're using a mandrel system to build a monocoque front triangle. So that's a different approach than how you normally face a front triangle. And that gets away from the problem you've had in the past with monocoque front triangles is they're actually heavy. And they're actually not optimized layup schedules because it's so hard to lay it up on a bladder or on tooling or doing like the old giant patents where you had that fold, like the fold over system where you'd lay it in the mold and then fold it and then put the bladder inside and then fold it back and all of that.
I'm not familiar with that, but that sounds horrible to lay up.
Yeah, it's not fun to lay up. It's also... you go down this rabbit hole of why the layup is not optimized, and hence a lot of companies went away from it and went to this construction where they could focus on building really good parts that then are bonded together.
So our mandrel system optimizes the monocoque structure.
Yes. We're able to get...
Because we figured out the magic sauce.
Yeah, essentially. So we basically have a inside of the frame that is a rigid part that we can actually lay composite parts onto, and then also in the mold, and then we basically assemble the whole thing, and so we have a true mandrel inside the bike that's removed when we're done.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's the general shape for the front triangle, but let's talk about the intentional shape of the actual tubes, like the head tube. It's a very thin hourglass shape.
Yep.
So is that because it's an aero? Is it more responsive? Is it make it stiffer?
It is more aero. That's the main focus. And that's, so like when you look at aerodynamics, the frontal surface area. So like if the bike is coming towards you, that area that you see in front of you is one of the most important things for wind flow. The less that the wind sees, the quicker it is. There's less that has to block it. So making that head tube as thin as possible and yet not making it so thin that it actually weakens the frame is a very fine line. And that's where a lot of attention was paid to the RF20, is that balance. Again, we come back to this balancing act of making it aero but still making it functional and making it a good bike.
Right.
And that's really, I think we, there's obviously always going to be the argument like, oh, you could have, you know, pushed this harder. But then it's like, yeah, but then you would have compromised this. So that's that line. And so the front head tube, I'm very proud of it because it is less frontal surface area than some of our old time trial frames that used like 1-inch steer tubes, super narrow, everything. The RF20 actually has less frontal surface area for the same head tube height.
And how does that affect the torsional load?
So, well, that's a good question. The old problem that we had was on our old frames, we used 1-inch steer tubes, which is the older, very, very thin steer tubes, and external headsets so that we could actually mill down the head tubes as thin as possible. And you reduced your torsional strength when cornering, breaking into a corner, like fast ascending and braking. The bike did not perform great, but it's really fast in a straight line. Now, the RF20 uses a tapered headset, which is common in the bike industry. We use 1 1/8 top bearing, and we use 1 1/2 bottom bearing, which is essentially about as big as a system as you can get. There are people that run 1 1/2 to 1 1/4 or 1 1/4 straight through. We don't. We use 1 1/2 to 1 1/8. And we were able to design the front head tube, that hourglass that you described, is designed around the bearing selection. So we actually selected the bearings that were that we designed the front head tube for, and then built the carbon structure around it to encase the bearing. And then around the taper is actually guided by the steer tube taper of the fork.
Cool.
So it's as minimal as possible. And if you, well, I'll let you continue down the frame because...
Yes, let's continue down the frame. Let's continue down the down tube of the frame, which is the bottom tube.
Right.
And you designed this specifically to hold a bottle cage. Hey, guys, we're in a shop.
And that's a vacuum running.
That is a vacuum.
Hold on.
Okay. Are we running apart right now?
I'm testing vacuum holdings.
We're testing vacuum holdings. So Arm designed this down tube specifically. Oh, hey, we also have a dog here that loves vacuum. Okay, so the down tube was designed specifically to hold a bottle cage. Why is a bottle cage so important? Because let me tell you, I ride a steel frame. And I never actually use the water bottle because I can't reach it while I'm riding my bike. I have short arms and arm syndrome compared to my legs, I guess. I look like a drunk T-Rex trying to reach down to my water bottle cage. Oh my so God. I only it's drink when I come to a complete stop.
Yes.
But enough about me. Why did you design it with a bottle cage in mind?
Oh, my gosh. I wanted you to continue. We designed the down tube to incorporate the water bottle because you need to drink water when you're riding a bike.
And oh, so that's where I messed up too. I never had water in my water cage.
Hence, you didn't need to reach for it.
Hence why I look like a drunk tree T-Rex.
So we want to focus on having the airflow flow over the seat, the water bottle itself. And so creating a traditional teardrop shape is not... it would not work. It does not benefit you if you have a water bottle there. So we designed it so that it would incorporate the air, the flow that comes off the down tube would go around the bottle itself, which is super important. Also, we actually designed the mounting location of the water bottle cage very specific to the layup of the bike. So there's actually, it's designed to be reinforced where the bottle cages are so that you can have a much better connection so you don't have as much problems down the road. The other thing that's really interesting about the down tube system is if you look at the RF20, I think the signature look for it is this edge that comes off of the down tube.
It's very edgy.
Yeah, and there's this one, like, it's an edge, it's a crease. I don't know how to describe it quite, but it's that piece that comes off the head tube and goes across into the down tube. I think it's the most distinguishing factor of the bike. And that is actually designed to tie into the torsional strength that you were talking about in the head tube so that we can actually within that section so that it gains us torsional strength on the bottom race and bottom bearing of the head tube. And so that ties into the down tube and gives you much better braking performance, cornering performance, out of corner sprinting. All of those characteristics come in because of that, the way that ties in together.
See, I actually just learned something. I didn't even know why that existed. I just thought it looked cool. But there's a reason.
Oh, there's a reason.
Which probably goes back to our previous episode about simulation, because all of this was thrown into a wind tunnel.
Yes, this is all thrown into a wind tunnel. It's a CFD simulated, and it's also we also run structural analysis on the composite structures.
Cool.
So, and then the only other thing that just quickly before we leave the down tube. One of the other, I mean, there's other characteristics of the down tube that make it interesting, but just for this episode, the other one that's cool is that we actually, the shape that it goes into at the bottom bracket is optimized for width, to gain width on the bottom bracket so that you get more torsional strength out of the bottom bracket junction.
Mm-hmm.
So that shape and that transition, there's a lot of attention paid to it.
Because it looks a little wide, but there's a purpose.
There's a purpose. It's designed to really give you a ton of strength in the bottom bracket area so that you can have as much pedal efficiency as possible.
Awesome. Let's move up to the seat tube.
Yeah.
Which is also a narrow shape.
Yes.
And it's not blunt.
It's not right. So we did not, you'll see a lot of companies you see that focus on that do like that arrow acceptance for the water bottle. So they'll make a, you know, drafting area for the bottle to sit. They also do a very similar job on the seat tube, and we didn't. We came with a different approach because we started running some simulations and noticed that there wasn't a huge difference if we made it blunt to kind of grab the back of that dirty air coming off the bottle cage, or if it was a full foil.
Dirty air.
Yeah, dirty air.
Is that what it's called after it goes?
Yeah, so when you hit, when you get turbulence, and you start getting that, when you look in the tunnel and you see the lines kind of going all over the place.
Dirty air.
It's dirty air.
Dirty. Okay.
So we designed it so that if you didn't have a water bottle cage on, again, this is that whole threading that needle.
Mm-hmm.
If you decided, like if you're racing a crit and you want to take your RF20 out and you ran a single bottle cage, you'd actually gain an advantage, because it actually helps clean up the air coming off onto the rear wheel.
Cleaner air.
It helps clean the air.
Less, the more dehydrated you are, the cleaner your air.
Sure, yeah.
Because you have less water.
Yeah, there's a correlation there.
But if you're very thirsty, you have very dirty air. Okay, moving on. Okay, can we move on to the top tube?
Yeah.
It is more of a rectangular square shape, yep, on the sides to stiffen the bike. How, mm-hmm, is that different from normal tubing? And you also said it was reinforced for impact. What kind of impact are you talking about?
Okay, so that's a really good question. So it is a kind of more of a square shape, like a torsion box. And that helps gain some rigidity again in the front end. It also helps locate the seat post and a little bit better. So you don't gain as much torsional load there when you're pedaling and you're kind of rocking that seat a little bit. That can transfer into the seat tube, which can actually flex and move the bottom bracket section a little bit. So we designed it to be a little on the square side to help give you some torsional strength in that seat tube. It's also tapered out towards the head tube, again, to gain some strength in the head tube and also to kind of transition that air and try to guide the air that's coming off the head tube and guide it down the top tube and extend that region behind the head tube. Regarding impact, we come from doing a lot of carbon repair over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the big impact areas is handlebars spinning around and hitting the top tube.
Right.
Also, when you go to a coffee shop or go someplace, a lot of people, I don't know why, they lean their top tube against something. You shouldn't do that, people. You should lean it against a seat.
Do you lean your top
tube? The top tube, they'll lean it against a pole or something.
Oh, you mean like I have that bike back there?
yes, exactly.
Wait,
don't,
you're saying to put your seat.
Put the seat against the wall.
I feel like that's not as sturdy, but, you know, what do I know? You break your bike.
Yes, don't do that. So, yeah, that's a common area where things get hit. Also, you know, you're holding a water bottle, you drop it, it hits the top tube. People sit on the top tubes when they're descending sometimes. So we have a reinforcement in the top tube to help reduce the possibility of cracks being formed from impact on the top tube.
Cool.
So we paid very close attention across this bike from our experience in repairs, right, to make sure that the bike is durable.
Okay, let's finish up the front triangle here and talk about the bottom bracket.
Yes.
What is the general function of a bottom bracket?
Oh, this is a whole episode.
Oh, gosh. Okay. If you just had to explain it to me in like one sentence. What does a bottom bracket do?
It holds the bearings that hold the crank.
Holds the bearings that holds the cranks that holds the pedals?
That holds the chain rings that holds the pedals that turns your leg power into
forward
motion.
It's a very important housing for the engine of the bike.
Yes, I'll take that.
That's a very, yes.
Yeah, so it is the heart. I've always referred to the bottom bracket as the heart of the bike. It is where all of the power is generated. It all goes through the bottom bracket.
Okay, so our original concept, and I'm just going to read this because I have no idea what this means, for our bottom bracket was an Evo 386 T47.
Yes.
Was the original concept.
Yeah.
You changed the system.
Yeah.
Explain. First of all, explain what I just said, and then explain why you changed it.
Okay, so there's a 500 million bottom bracket standards in the bike industry. FSA came out with what they call the Evo 386, which is a clever system. It's basically a BB30, which is the 30 mil axle that goes for the crank, bearing system, but wider. It's 86.5 millimeters wide instead of 68 millimeters. So it gives you a wider platform for the axle of the crank and gets the bearings wider farther out.
You think you'd want wider, though? I'd feel safer on a wider system, right?
You could sit here and argue this.
Oh, but if I want to go fast, I don't want it as wide? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, also. But then also there's the fit factor of it and your stance, your width stance.
Right,
because
you want your feet a certain distance apart.
This
is a whole fit episode we need to discuss.
This is a multi-part fit episode.
Okay.
So let's not go down that rabbit hole. But the idea that the 386 it's a good balance. I think it's a good balance, and it also, the way the bike is made, it helps us with the layup and how the heart of the bike is. Now, the T47 was developed by Argonaut and Chris King, which is a really cool system, which is essentially a press fit 30 bearing that's threaded. Cool concept of how to work. And I really liked it, and I was going to adopt it on this bike. When we started going down the rabbit hole of simulation, like we talked about in the previous episode, we realized that there was material that was left on the table that didn't need to be there. And then also we get into this whole issue of concentricity of the drive side bearing and the non-drive side bearing of them being in alignment so that they're both parallel and on the same axis.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult because you have a two-piece mold that's either side, so you have to... The accuracy of the bearing location is dictated by the tooling of the mold.
This I know what you're talking about.
Yes. So, because you do
because
the
mold I can sell you a misaligned bike.
So the issue of this alignment issue on bearings is a real big problem, and it causes all kinds of bottom brackets. You get drag in the bearings.
Mm-hmm.
So we started going down this rabbit hole on how to fix this with it. Fix is the wrong word. How to make sure that a T47 bottom bracket system is perfectly aligned is really difficult to do. And we were going to tackle that and then realize that there was no point because we had a weight penalty in order to do it. So what we ended up doing is we designed our own precision machined bottom bracket sleeve that basically bonds into the frame, which is somewhat similar to what was done in the first BB30 bottom brackets, except for the fact that this isn't welded. This is actually bonded into place. So we basically built our own bottom bracket system and then bonded it into the frame.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we did. And then we ended up designing our own preload spacers that load the correct preload between the bearings. And then we also designed our own non-contact seals on the outside that that seal the bottom bracket to the crank interface system. And then took it a little farther than that and actually designed specific non-contact seals for each crank system. So that whatever crank you have, we actually designed a seal system so that there's no spacers, there's no shims. It just fits all nicely snug together and sealed.
We did?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Sitting back there on the workbench.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Let's move on to the rear triangle.
Yes.
Okay. So your rear triangle is the chain stays and the seat stays.
Yep.
And the dropouts.
Yep.
You have an asymmetrical design for that.
Yep.
Where the asymmetry begins in the chain stays and then works its way down the tube towards the bottom bracket.
Mm-hmm.
And Why did you do that?
So the load that are faced on each chainstay is completely different from one another. Your drive side chainstay is under compression.
So drive side's on the right side.
The right side, so the side that has the chain rings. You're basically compressing that chainstay into the bottom. You're basically trying to pull the rear wheel into the bottom bracket. So it's being pulled. It's then being, if you think about it, it's rotating and twisting kind of on the axis of the non-drive side dropout where the hub meets. Mm-hmm. You get this twisting force. So we design them for each of the load cases that happen. And then also on the non-drive side, you have a disc brake mount. So you have a braking force that's being applied. So you have completely different forces that are happening. So mm-hmm. each tube is specifically designed for the job that it's doing.
Based on the simulation data.
Based on the simulation
that
data.
That we talked about in the previous episode.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I could go.
I know you could.
So I'm trying to tone it.
Move on to the dropouts.
Yes, dropouts.
The dropouts are hollow.
Yes.
As we discussed previously, we talked about intentional design.
Yep.
They are net-shaped composite molds.
Yep.
Are dropouts not normally hollow? No, they're usually like not carbon, right?
Well, some are not carbon. Some are metal and that are done. Others are made out of it's referred to in the industry as forged carbon, which is basically chopped carbon prepreg that's pressed into a shape.
Mm-hmm.
And then they machine it all out from stock.
Oh, so it's machined. But ours is in the mold.
Ours is all done in the mold.
Which I know because I lay up these molds.
Yes, you do.
And they are designed to have the cable routing go through them.
Yep. On the drive side one, the cable routing goes through. It has a hollow section that guides the cable through and out the back. That's all molded into the in the mold. Mm-hmm. So there is some trimming that's done post mold, but because we extend it because there's some draft angles that we just can't get in the mold.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some trimming operations that happen, but it's it's non-structural parts that we're trimming.
Right.
I mean, we're not trying to create a shape from it.
Within that, custom axles.
Yeah, so there's a whole, that's another whole episode on its own. But yes, there's a...
I don't know if I can do a whole episode on axles.
I could do a whole episode on dropout systems,
okay,
for sure.
That
dropout
makes
systems.
Sense.
And
dropout system, okay.
That all connects with axles and locators. So,
I can get on board with that.
So we have, one of the things that we did is, we come back from repairs. And so a lot of dropout systems are carbon on aluminum contact. So what I mean by that is that you have a aluminum or steel hub that is in contact with the carbon of the frame, and you get this like wearing. Carbon doesn't wear very well in those regards. So we designed the dropout and hanger system is actually on the inside of the frame, so it locates the axle of the hub and then connects it. And then we built all of our threading and attachment systems as like these sandwich pieces that go together into the drive side. And then on the non-drive side, we designed our own indexing sleeve that's this really thin part that's all made out of metal so that the axle rubs against that. And then we designed, because I hate the look of through axles, it's a through axle system, and I hate the look of through axle nuts sticking out the outside of the frame. I just think it looks really bad and tacky. So I designed our own axle, through axle system that matches the frame. So it's all perfectly lined up and it's all nice and flush.
Mm-hmm.
And it's ridiculously light.
Looks good. And then quickly, let's discuss the seat stays, because they're intentionally bent towards the frame.
Yeah.
The transition is designed within the mold.
Yeah.
And
it's done in the seat stay mold. So we said like the front triangle is monocoque. Mm-hmm. Our front triangle is fully monocoque frame, and then it's fully monocoque. And then the seat stays, each seat stay is separate, each chain stay is separate, and each dropout is different,
mm-hmm.
separate. So yeah. Those are all separate parts that are bonded together.
Mm-hmm.
The seat stay is a ridiculously complicated part because it basically turns 90 degrees at an angle to go into the frame. All of that is, once again, net shaped and is done inside the seat stay mold. The reason for that is so that the air that flows over that section of the seat tube, it guides the air and cleans the air up as much as we possibly can going over the rear wheel of the bike. It's also a very, it's an aerofoil shape that goes down to the dropouts, and it helps clean up the air that's coming through there and have minimal drag.
Yeah, clean up that dirty air.
Clean up that dirty air.
Okay, and then let's touch on the seat post real quick, which is also custom built.
Yeah, it's a proprietary seat post.
It's quite thin, no?
It is. It's a very thin post. It's an aero post again. It has a blunt rear to it so that it has a nice sharp foil on the front so it can cut through the air and then guide the air off the side of it. Yeah, it's a pretty cool post. There's also some interesting composite layups that are in there.
And then our handlebars that we're using for the RF20 currently are just the stock handlebars.
Right.
But we're looking forward to refocusing on our own major handlebars here in 2021.
Yes, we've been working on some systems for
that's
that.
That's next up.
Yeah, that's the next step after the RF20.
And then quickly, sizing for the RF20, we do not have an official geometry chart posted on the website, but we are redesigning that page here in the next coming weeks.
Yeah, and so, I mean, one of the big things, we've gotten that question quite a bit, and the reason we never released one was we got a lot of the pre-orders that we had for the RF20 were from previous customers, and they just had this... we've always made full custom frames, and they had their old geometry charts, and they wanted it. So all of the pre-orders are all in custom geometries. So we haven't made any of the stock sizes for any of the pre-orders. And to be honest, we were kind of just we had enough pre-orders to justify the production of the frame and keep going with it. So we just took our pre-orders and started running as fast as we could to get. Into production.
But we're going to work on the online builder, which
we're adding
a mechanical Grupo option to what you have DITO2 option we have, available.
Yeah, so we're going to be adding we're going to be adding mechanical, we're going to be adding Campy to it. We're going to be updating some of the features on it for the builder.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be updating the page to add into some of the composite side of it a little more, go into the geometry charts and stuff like that. We're going to be adding quite a bit here in the next couple weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For any listeners that have reached out to us, we are getting back to you soon.
Yes.
Any inquiries we've had about the RF20 because it's really got quite a few here in the last couple weeks.
Yeah.
Lead times for the RF20 pre-order is now available online, and we're rolling out here soon in the first quarter with a projected lead time of 6 to 8 weeks for frames.
Yeah.
You're going to offer stock sizes 54, 56, and 58.
Yeah.
With a custom option that will have a little bit of a longer lead time since a custom mold will need made.
Yeah.
But also feel free to email us with any questions you have as we update all of that information on the website.
Yeah. So we're trying, I mean, our goal right now is to get next month to start rolling out pre-orders. I'll just start getting all the pre-orders out next month. And then once we get through with those, we'll start looking at 6 to 8 weeks.
And then quickly touch on the carbon specs.
It'll be
a whole new, it'll be another episode, but just quickly in case anyone has questions about the carbon composites that are used on the RF20.
Yeah. So this is a big rabbit hole of a topic, but so one of the big things that's focused on the RF20, again, this goes back to the front triangle design where that we're talking about a monocoque front triangle that's based around a mandrel. We are using, quite a bit of bidirectional woven braided sleeves that are prepregs. So we have, imagine a Chinese finger trap, essentially, is what it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And so the cross-section of the tube defines the orientation of the fibers. It allows us to do quite a bit of things. It also really enhances the ride characteristics of the bikes and allows us to manipulate the frame characteristics.
A lot of unidirectionals used to build up the stiff parts that
exactly.
Need.
So there's a balance between bidirectional sleeve and unidirectional sleeves. And we have we use a standard modulus and high modulus fibers for it. We have a really nicely tuned carbon layup that we're doing. And then I think we talked about in maybe second or third quarter to start offering some other layup options for the bike.
And that was the RF20 in a nutshell.
Yeah, that's the fast-forwarded
version.
That's
the fast-forwarded version. Quick question. Will there be an RF21? Just kidding. Maybe in 2022.
I can't.
Okay, so we have a lot to look forward to here in the next 3 weeks or so in terms of marketing and a huge campaign push we're working very hard on right now, and we're excited for things coming up.
Yeah.
And then in future podcasts, we're still looking forward to invite some guests and talk about design. I think we have a few ideas here now from this podcast about maybe stuff we could talk about with design.
Yeah, for sure. There's a lot.
So,
As you know, I can talk about anything.
Yes, I know.
Ever.
Anyway, We thank you for choosing to take some time with us, and we look forward to future breakaways. I'll try my hardest to put any mentions on our news section on predatorcycling.com. Also, look for us on Instagram and LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and in person here in Tennessee. Also, be sure to check out the RF20 on our website, predatorcycling.com. And Arm, let's get back to work. So our listeners, we ask you to please share, like, and subscribe. We're available on all major streaming platforms. Thanks for listening, and have a good one, and find some time to break away.